It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday, and lots to get into on today's show. Coming up in just a little bit, if we get the telephone connection, we'll be checking in with Director of Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, talking about what's happening in Montgomery, but not what's happening just down the street from his office in the state legislature, as Senate Bill 66 is out there. Maybe there'll be a clarification in the name. I call it the baiting bill, but it is officially just SB 66. We'll talk about this this bill that's right now passed through the Senate, going to the House, and what it all means. And we'll get the take from the folks at DCNR about this coming up. And also, speckled trout fishing wide open.
Absolutely, man. They're killing them right now, aren't they?
Catching some big girls as well. Seeing some big trout coming in. We'll talk about that and some of the tactics. We'll do that here towards the end of the hour. But
and
right
turkey
now,
turkey season is still going on, too.
There is turkey season. And heck, since, yeah, I've killed a turkey since last time we talked.
Yeah, awesome. We'll talk about that in a little while, hopefully.
We'll do that. Right now, though, we got to talk about some sweetwater fishing and some green trout. We do that with Captain Wayne Miller. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Good morning, guys. How are y'all doing?
Good. Now, my question is here, just did you kick a can or anything just when the rivers looked like they were going to do right and everything was coming down, and then, well, surprise, 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 they came back up?
Yeah, you know, it. I would tell you that I didn't say anything bad, but I did a few times. But the good news is, like you say, the bad news is, yes, the Mobile's back up to almost 7 feet, but it looks like that's about as high as it's going to get right now. So, it should be falling back out, and, with the water warming up, we got water temperatures now that have definitely, last week we had days up, pushing 90 degrees. So, all this water temperature is up in the 70s. So, from that standpoint, that's stabilized quite a bit. And that's really helped push a lot of fish up into the skinny, the shallow water for spawning. This coming week on, I think it's either Thursday or Friday, we got a full moon. So we'll be going into another, spawn on the bass, and they don't all spawn at one time. I mean, they do this in waves, but with that water temperature getting in that range from 72 to 76, I think we're going to see a big push, this coming week of fish up in the shallow water. Now you catch a lot of the males, but I've been catching quite a few good females too, pre-spawn fish. So that part of it is really good, but like you say, it's just, it's really frustrating, for the bass fishermen. But, we're fortunate down here, we've got access to, both the middle and the lower delta. But, when you look at people up, just 20, 30, 40 miles north of here, that like to fish like the Alabama River, it bumped back up to 25, 26 feet. So, they really got hammered up there.
And it looks like maybe tonight might get some more pretty heavy rain, Wayne.
But it's always, amazing, because typically, Mike, as you well know, even a heavy rain here locally, really doesn't hurt the fishing.
That's right.
Much. It's when they start really getting tons of rain up the state, and that's what negatively affects our delta tremendously. So, I've been doing really good this past week on, throwing, small spinner baits. I continue to throw that little Tweety, that little quarter ounce and the 3/8 ounce that Keith Lott makes, and catching a lot of fish on it. And I'm throwing a bladed jig quite a bit. Keith's making a bait called a thumper now, and it's been a real good bait for me. But when I have to slow down, I'm going to plastic, and I don't even want Sean to laugh at me. It's the watermelon chartreuse blizzard. Go ahead, get it in.
Right, right. Just, I'm not surprised. I'll say it that way.
And it's just like what we've talked about in the past, Wayne. It's what you have total confidence in is what you're going to throw.
Yeah, you know, it really is, Mike. I mean, I've got friends that, you know, really don't like that lizard. I mean, and some of them, you know, they can be in the boat with me, and, you know, they'll pull out a chameleon, which is a great color.
Yep.
You know, and they'll have tremendous confidence in it and fish it hard, and they'll catch fish on it. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for that. But, you know, there are times when, you know, I've really seen the color make a big difference.
But, absolutely, yes.
But, you know, a lizard or like a baby brush hog, a smaller creature bait, is just a fantastic bait to use here on the Delta. And, you know, something I'll just mention to y'all, man, this past week, it's incredible to me, even with all the influx of water we've had on this Delta this spring, up in the, you know, middle Delta, I'm still catching redfish up in the creeks.
Isn't that amazing?
And I've caught a few flounder this past week.
Up in the creeks? So,
Yeah.
And the flounder's surprising. The redfish, though, those jokers, just a side note, not to go all Dr. Science on this, but, you know, there are redfish not only in, like, Lake Shelby down in South Baldwin County, right? There's redfish in Lake Shelby down there that is essentially a freshwater lake. I mean, it's close to the Gulf, but it's a freshwater lake. It's bass and brim and all that.
Right.
There's redfish in there. And also, I know there are a couple lakes in Texas that are way inland. But they, I don't know if they introduced them over time or how they did it. They have redfish. They can't reproduce. But there's redfish living in interior Texas lakes. So the redfish have a very high tolerance for low salinity, unlike a speckled trout.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, that does not surprise me. I think, you know, they'll follow the bait. If the bait could learn how to, you know, walk on dry ground, I think the redfish should be right behind them.
Yeah, they don't care. Yeah, they're going to. You're right. They're going to go eat wherever that food goes. They're going.
You know, and but you know, it's really you know, it's fun to catch them. You know, and something else too. You know, I mentioned the flounder, and it's kind of getting back to the way it used to be, guys. You know, used to we caught just tremendous numbers of flounder just bass fishing.
Right.
And then over a course of years, you know, we saw those numbers really fall off, and I'm starting to see a lot more flounder like it used to be.
That's weird. So, you know, it's going to be right as the state is trying to, because, you know, we've been talking about it with Scott Bannon from Alabama Marine Resources. They're not sure exactly what, but there are some changes coming to the bag limits on flounder because they're trying to do their best to head off this issue. And maybe just about time we get around to implementing some changes on flounder bag limits and size.
They'll come back.
They're coming back on their own.
Well, Wayne, tell me this about the redfish. I mean, is this unusual for you to be catching redfish this time of the year? I know in the past, this time of year, you normally wouldn't catch them, I didn't think.
Yeah, you know, it really is, Mike, and that's something else. And obviously, you know, this isn't any kind of scientific deal. You know, it's just strictly from my observations. But, you know, I'm on the water so much. But I know last year and this year, and we talked about it several times, it's just amazing the numbers of redfish. I mean, I think their numbers have literally exploded.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've been seeing that at the south end and just in the inshore fishing.
Right.
And I say this on this show, I say it talking with Captain Bobby. I say it with Captain Charlie Gray, too. And Charlie and I kind of close to the same age and grew up around Dolphin Island. The golden age in my lifetime, not saying, you know, 100 years ago, but the golden age of red fishing is now. The red fishing is better.
I agree.
From my red fishing on the causeway like you're doing down to, you know, the front beach at Dolphin Island. The red fishing is the best it's ever been in my life. When I was a boy, it was a big deal if you caught one or two redfish.
Yeah.
Not now.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I mean,
and they're a fun fish. I know, you know, you bass purists, they mess up your time when you're bass fishing, but they sure are a fun fish to have mess up your bass fishing.
Oh, man, I absolutely love catching the reds. It's, you know, they're just a, of course, you know, I like catching any fish that I can lip like a bass.
Yeah.
You know?
and still keep your finger, yeah. Good stuff. Hey, Captain Wayne, before we wrap up here, remind folks if they want to get a trip booked with you and go out there and do some of this spring fishing, even maybe on into summer, time to get booked is now.
And, you know, they can reach me at 251-455-7404. And, you know, I do half-day and full-day trips. And that's something to think about, too, because, you know, we're slowly transitioning into this hot weather. And, man, it's, you know, if you go out there and stay 8-10 hours, you know, it can be a grind.
Yeah, it feels like you got run over when it's that kind of hot, that's for sure. Captain Wayne, as always, we appreciate it. Get back to catching, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
See you, Wayne.
Captain Wayne Miller checking in, and we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I hate it when the legislative portion of my job from the week gets in my outdoors portion of the week, but it's happening. SB 66, we'll talk about that next. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all with us on this Saturday. And big thank you, Captain Wayne Miller, who is, you know, it's a tough thing when your bass fishing just keeps getting messed up by the redfish. Break my heart, Captain Wayne. Break my heart. It's a good thing, though. It's a good thing. And I think the science backs it up, and maybe we'll get with Dr. Sean Powers out of C-Lab. But anecdotally, as a guy that's grown up here, you want to talk about the golden age, maybe 100 years ago, different story, but the golden age of red fishing in Southwest Alabama in my lifetime is now. It's not like there's no story for me to tell my kids when we're out there catching them going, oh, y'all should have seen it back when I was a kid. Uh-uh. See it now.
I agree. I mean, as far as catching them in the marsh and everything, like you're talking about, yes, I believe you're 100% right.
And so get out there and enjoy it. All right. We mentioned we'd be checking in, and we're interrupting him in the middle of some turkey hunting. So, you know, he must be, either I got something on him or he likes us. Director of Alabama Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, our buddy Chuck Sykes, joining us now. Hey, Chuck.
How do? Y'all good today?
Yeah, we're good.
Tell us where you're at.
I'm in an undisclosed location in Texas.
There you go.
Okay.
And we'll get the report soon. Let's talk, when we talk turkey, and so much I want to talk to you about, but first, let's talk about you and how turkey season's been for you so far.
Sean, this is going to hurt me to say it, but I have found out this season that I'm getting old and worn out. And y'all know me, I usually don't shoot. I'm usually caller and backup shooter, and it just worked this year that I have had the opportunity to shoot 4 turkeys, and I am sadly 50%. I had a hickory jump in front of one load and a rattan vine jump in front of the second load. I'm gonna have to get my eyes checked. I can't see anymore.
You know what that does, Chuck? It makes everybody else that's listening to this show say, man, it's good. It's not just me that's doing that, you know? Because let me tell you, if you hunt turkeys long enough, you're going to miss. If you hunt deer long enough, you're going to miss. I don't know what it is. It seems like it's worse about a turkey, though, than it is a deer.
Yeah, deer is one thing, but when you work for an hour and a half to call a turkey up, and he's standing there at 35 yards, and you pull the trigger, and he runs off, it's like, how in the world? And then you walk out there and start looking, and you see your whole load centered a little hickory tree that was about twice as big as my thumb. It's like, how didn't I see that?
You know, you can feel better about yours. We're at the same ratio this year, although you did 2 for 4. I did 1 for 2, missed one. The opening weekend, I had a biblical moment, a Lazarus moment. This gobbler came in that I had already in my mind had him riding in the truck and showing him off and eating him and all that good stuff. And I watched that dead turkey fly away.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have any forensics. I couldn't even find where I shot. I don't even know if I shot in the general vicinity of that turkey. So I'm 50-50 right now. And you do. Saying that, you make us all feel better. Thank you for your story. Thanks for sharing with us, John.
Being truthful.
You make us feel better about ourselves.
Misery loves company.
Yeah, I guarantee you that.
But that tells
it's
me.
It's been a tough season, man. We were early. We were probably 2 weeks early bringing the season in this year. year just how the weather fell, and I did not sit down to a good gobbling turkey till the 27th of March.
Man, that is late.
That is late for you, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping the last few weeks of the season is going to be good for everybody. They're going to be gobbling and doing their thing.
Well, I tell you what, I was saying this the other day to my buddy who we mentioned on the show a couple weeks ago. So I got drawn this year, hunted one of the SOAs, hunted Cedar Creek, and we just had fantastic. We're in birds a lot, but they were henned up in there. But my buddy and I were talking. Whoever gets there about time the hens go to nest, whoever's drawn for those hunts then, they're going to pile up some gobblers because, my gosh, at the birds on those places.
It's unbelievable that that's a piece of public hunting property, isn't it?
It is, y'all. Seriously, I mean, I said it's the best turkey hunting, chasing, listening that I've had in 10 or 12 years. And I'm talking about private land.
Yeah,
it's the best in a decade.
Yeah,
I've been into. So, yeah, and they all, most of them had girlfriends except for the Jakes when I was there. But about time now going forward, whoever's got those hunts here at the end of the season, y'all better get ready for some tallies of some turkeys coming out of those SOAs.
Chuck, I
hope so. We need to get some of those old ones out of there to make room for the young.
That's right. There's some old ones. There's one that came by me off my left shoulder the first morning of my hunt, and that joker, I know it's in hindsight he looks bigger, but that's a 22-pound turkey if I've ever seen it. That joker was old man of the woods.
Chuck, Sean came and hunted with me. He hunted that SOAs on Friday and Saturday, and then he came and hunted with me on Sunday, and that's all he could talk about was how good that hunting was over there. I'm telling you, that's all he could talk about. I said, well, wait. I said, we're going to have us a good hunt. I said, Saturday, I heard 15-plus turkeys gobbling. I said, I could have heard 20. And then I said, we're going to have a good hunt tomorrow. And me and Sean went, and there was a turkey gobbled right at daylight. And Sean said, well, we ought to go to that one. I said, just hang on. They're going to be going crazy here in a minute. And Sean said, we ought to go to that one. He gobbled again. And after about 10 minutes, I said, Sean, I think we ought to go to that turkey over there. You know, what makes it one day they gobble 15, 20 of them gobbling, and then the next day there's like two or three? I don't know. Same type
the
weather.
Idea of what makes them do it.
I don't know either.
That's,
like
that's
to go
what
to,
makes them so frustrating. It makes you want to kill all of them.
I'm telling you, it's crazy.
That for sure. A reminder, too, because, I mean, this information is what I'm going to be picking brains for here in a couple months, that reminding folks, like I killed one the other day. Thank goodness you don't have to fill out game check when you miss one. But when you do kill your turkey, you need to go to your app and fill out that you harvested your turkey. And that information is coming back to y'all in Montgomery. And we'll be able to see that down the road, right? We'll be able to see what the actual kill numbers are.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's updated almost real time. So you can go to outdooralabama.com and go to game check. And you.
I lost you there for a second. Are you still with us?
Yep.
Okay, there we
go. Me?
Yeah, I got you now.
Sorry. Yes, you can go to the outdooralabama.com right now, and you can check the state and the county statistics.
And that's, I mean, that lets you know what, you know, kind of what's trending around there. That's why it's so important to get this information in. Let's talk about some of the worries on turkeys. We've had this conversation, turkey populations. Do we have an issue? I had Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project on the show last week, and Dave and I were talking. I got to that section, and Dave is, it's not like he's quiet, but he's not a man of a gazillion words until I asked him about turkey populations. And he said, they're doing just fine. He said, you know, y'all are saying they're, he said, I'm traveling all over the place. The guy does hunt more than anybody I know. He says he thinks those populations are just fine. What's your take on this? What's the science telling us?
The science right now is saying that eastern turkey numbers are down. And that's not just Alabama. That's the southeast region. We had our spring directors meeting last week in West Virginia, so I was with all my counterparts. And every one of them are saying that their numbers are down. We're not saying we don't have any turkeys, but from historic highs, these numbers are down, and we need to pay attention to it.
Is there part of population cycles? I know it's not like the lynx and the snowshoe hare or anything, but where when critter numbers come back, they recover like they did, you know, through management, and they came back in the state. Does it overshoot its the level it should be at? Does it run past it then come back to a new level? Is that a thing in wildlife or not?
Yes, it certainly can be. The problem with turkeys is different from like the snowshoe hares that you were talking about. Turkeys hatch is so weather dependent, site specific, predator dependent. There's so many factors that go into it that if you drop too low, it's hard to rebound because of all of those outside factors. So we don't want to be caught flat-footed on this.
Yeah, and that's one thing. So, I mean, site-specific and trapping like I do, and I know so many people are into now. I think I'm trying to I do, you know, burn the woods, and I do chufa, and I try to have good bugging area for poults and all those things to try to grow the population. But when I trap, I feel like I'm trying to make that possible valley shallower. You know what I'm saying? Where the drop down. So,
absolutely.
You know, I'm almost, it's not even a promoting, I'm hedging against the negative.
And so there are, to go back to Dave's point, there are some places that have turkeys running out of their ears because they've done proper management. They've got everything right. They are not experiencing a problem. But try not to look at it with blinders. We're having to look at the whole state, not at just specific well-managed pockets of the state. So as a whole, there's some issues that we need to address.
Chuck, here's a kind of a percentage I think you could kind of look at. Tut had their turkey rodeo this past weekend, and they had around 100 people, and they hunted 2 days. So let's just say that's 200 people hunting, and they killed about 8 or 10 turkeys. So over 200 people and 8 or 10 turkeys, you're looking at about 5% of the people killed a turkey. You know, just to say they killed 5 Saturday, 5 Sunday, but 5
right.
turkeys killed out of 100 people, 10 turkeys killed out of 200 people. So that's about
but
a
that's
5%.
On a given day, though, right? You hold that rodeo on a day when maybe they gobble better or something, you know?
Well, but I'm just saying, when people go hunting, I mean, basically it's about a 5% chance, you know, you're going to kill a turkey a lot of times, you know? And they got some big turkey hunters,
and
some of the best.
Well-managed places with some pretty decent turkey hunters. So I would say that's probably above the average of what you're looking at statewide. So
yeah.
Does that tell you something, that there's not as many turkeys out there available? Because that group should have killed way more turkeys than that. I don't care what the weather is, just your law of averages on the properties that they hunt.
Well, you would think so. I've got one friend of mine that they there was 4 of them hunting, I think, and there was 5 misses. And no kills.
Well, okay, so that's not the turkey's fault now.
Yeah, so you got to throw some misses in there too, I guess. But anyway, I agree with them. I mean, you know, that's some of the best turkey hunters around that hunt that turkey rodeo of Tuts. And to only kill that many, that's pretty tough.
And we'll pick this up, run to the break here and come back, more of our discussion, because there's some things that I want to get into from the legislative front, because it's not all science when it comes to wildlife management, because, well, Goat Hill gets involved, and we'll get into that when we get back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And segment of the show pre-recorded, and I want to let y'all know that too, because we're talking about something that is in play as we're recording this, in play in Montgomery, and this could have a answer and a decision by the time you're hearing this on the show. And if it does, we will address that on next week's show. But we're working off of what we know right now, and what we're talking about is SB 66, and I know there's probably a proper name for it. I've called it the baiting bill. I'm sure maybe there's somebody in Montgomery who correct me on that. But for lack of a better term, the baiting bill, SB 66, passes the Senate, goes into the House. And if you're just joining us, too, we're talking to Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, who's taking a little time away from turkey hunting to talk with us now. So let's talk some Goat Hill. I know that's not the favorite part of your job.
It's not, but it's a necessary part of it. But you know, for the past several years, the baiting bill has passed the House but has died in the Senate. Well, this year it is already passed the Senate and is supposed to go to the House floor today. It passed the House Senate, the House Ag and Forestry Committee earlier last week, and now it's supposed to hit the floor today.
Tell folks that because this has been tweaked and had some different versions from time to time, what is, give me the something I can understand. What does this bill say? What does it mean for baiting? What would it legalize?
It would legalize hunting deer and hogs over feed.
I mean, sitting there looking at the feed.
You can sit in a pile and shoot them eating a pile. Yeah, it takes the 100 yards and out of sight completely out if you have a license to do it. They put a couple of years ago a privilege license. So when you go online to buy your hunting license, you just simply click and say, yep, I want to buy the baiting privilege. And then that gives you the ability to, if you choose so, to hunt over feed.
Is there a precedent set for that? I mean, I know that there are states where baiting is legal and hunting over bait's legal. But are there states where they have the nuance that if you don't pay your money, you can't hunt over bait, but if you pay your money, you can?
Not that I'm aware of.
See, I mean, that's one of the things here. I mean, I could have a general discussion of what bothers me about this, and I want to get into science with you as well. But I got to tell you, just on a political, just as an American front, the idea that you pay extra money, and people argue, you pay money for a duck stamp to hunt ducks. But yeah, but anybody who hunts ducks is paying that. In this case, you buy your way into being able to hunt over bait. I mean, it doesn't sit well with me.
Well, and it doesn't sit well with a bunch of people. But then on the flip side, people say, well, if you choose not to do it, don't do it. I choose to hunt over feed, so I'm going to buy my license where I can do so, and then that money goes for wildlife conservation.
No, I like the fact that it goes, and that's one of the things why this is such a double-edged sword to me. I like the fact that the money is going for wildlife conservation. But I see the political trap that was set with that. Somebody like me who looked at that and says, I want that money to go to wildlife conservation. At the same time, it seems like an uneven footing. I mean, if you want to, I want y'all to get the money, or conservation to get the money, but at the same time, either should be able to hunt in that pile of corn or not. You can choose what you're going to do, not buy your way into it. I don't know. It just it sticks in my craw.
I know, but for every person with your viewpoint, there's some that love it. There's one that loves it. So This is the most divided thing I've ever seen. I'll tell you what, I'm personally, this is not director talking, this is just Chuck and Sean and Mike talking.
Yep.
I will buy it as an insurance policy, where if I go hunt with Sean, I don't have to worry whether there's corn out there, whether the feeder is 98 yards and I can see the leg of it. It's a $15 insurance policy where I don't have to worry about it anymore. Because honestly, I don't get to hunt with as many people as I would like to now because of that, because it's too much work. I've got to make sure I do everything right.
That's
now
right.
This gives me that insurance policy.
Well, Chuck, I'm kind of with Sean on that. But, knowing that this money goes straight to the conservation department, and that's what it does, right?
Yes, this is the way it's set up. The sponsors of this bill have allowed us to make amendments to it to make it more. And that was one of them. And it was talked about putting a sticker on a feeder and this, that, and other. And when I was asked my opinion, I said, make it a license. That way my officers are not having to walk around in the woods looking for a feeder with a sticker on it. If they check someone at the truck and says, let me see your license, here's my hunting license, here's my WMA license, oh, there's your baiting license, have fun, enjoy your day.
Yeah.
It takes that part out of it.
Now,
another thing that it y'all know that if you hunt on your own.
Hey, we're losing you there. Can you? Are you back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now. Okay. You said that if you're hunting on your own what?
You're hunting on your own property. Legally, you do not have to have a hunting license. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you're over 65, you don't have to have a hunting license. And if you're under 16, you don't have to have a hunting license. Well, the way this is drawn up, everybody, it doesn't matter whether you're 7 or 107, if you're going to hunt over feed, you're going to have to buy this privilege. All right, so what that does is it lets us count for the first time in history the number of hunters in Alabama, and that allows us to get to more of that federal money than we ever have before where we can put wildlife conservation on the ground.
Yeah, and we've had to explain that.
That does make sense.
And the quick version of that, can you give folks why that's important about how matching funds work?
Yeah, it's we fund wildlife conservation through the sale of hunting license and the matching dollars from buying guns and ammunition. Well, the only way we can get to that money is sale hunting licenses. That money is apportioned to the state based on the number of hunting licenses we sell. So we now are being able to count these three groups of people that historically we could not count as hunters. So that allows us access to more money to buy more land, to put more wildlife work on the ground, to have staff that we can administer the program. That's one thing. But another amendment that they allowed us to put on there this year, which for me, this is why I can say as a director, this is okay. In the event of a disease outbreak, the commissioner has the ability to manage feeding in the state. That means stop and, more importantly, supplemental feeding. Because right now, it's legal to feed 365 days a year.
Okay.
By statute. But if this passes, it gives the commissioner the authority to regulate that feeding in those diseased areas. It gives us the power to do that, or we can monitor disease better.
Okay.
So for me, that's why I can say, yeah, if it's going to have to happen with that on there, I'm okay with it.
So it does. It enhances your ability, because right now you don't have it for just feeding.
Right.
So it brings
that's
in feeding and baiting together. And when you say disease, I mean, are we talking CWD, or what if it's blue tongue, or you know, something else? I mean,
well, mainly CWD, but you know, some states have brucellosis, some states have TB. We don't know. We don't have CWD right now, but we're preparing. But that's one of the first things that states do is they prohibit feeding in those zones. Well, right now, this would give us the authority to do that.
Okay, okay. And I'm just losing you again there on the signal. But so if this passes, then you will have the ability, depending on, and it wouldn't be maybe statewide, if it's a West Central Alabama or Northeast Alabama or something like that, you could make it by zone that you would prohibit the feeding or the baiting, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. See, there's a lot more to that. And I was wondering about that component here, that because that's one of the, you know, ideas. People say, hey, finally, they're going to green light baiting, and this is when we got CWD knocking on our door from our west, and maybe from our north too, with Tennessee.
I kind of lost him for a second. But you know, Sean, when you think about what Chuck's talking about with the $15 license and what he's explained here to us, you know, it makes it easier for me to say, yeah, I'll do that, because we're going to get a lot more money, not just from the $15 license, but from the federal government. It's going to double or triple that, or whatever it is.
Yeah, sure. We got to do it. Usually a 25% match.
Yeah. So it's going to be good for the state to do that. I mean, I hate to do that, like you say, but I would be for it. And what, you know, when you're looking at $15, that's two bags of corn. You know, if you're willing to put the feed out. So, but it is different than any other state. Most states are, you just go put corn out and you're done.
Chuck, are you still with us? Okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll just wrap it because we've maybe we have him right here. See if Chuck's back on with us.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Hey, listen, we're going to wrap up. I know you're getting ready to get after some turkeys there, and the signal is not. I appreciate you checking in with us this week, and when you get back here, we'll get some more turkey stories from you, and then we can ask you more questions about what did or did not happen in the legislature.
That sounds good. I appreciate you and Mike talking to me and giving me the opportunity to tell the whole story.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just don't miss no more turkeys. If you do, I'm gonna send you my contacts out there, my contact lenses, so you can see better.
We appreciate it. Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, Chuck Sykes, on with us. We're going to come back and wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Chuck Sykes, Director Sykes, for joining us. Yeah, he's out in Texas, so kind of a sketchy cell phone signal, but appreciate him checking in. And like I said, this part of the show had to be pre-recorded before we know the outcome of SB 66. But as the director said, in all the years past, the House has passed this bill out and it's died in the Senate. I will say, let me put a little bit of weekday show information into the mix, although by the time this may be settled, by the time this is airing, that this year it's going to be kind of weird. Usually things get started in the House and go die in the Senate.
Yeah.
This year, there have been, I mean, from Lotto to a bunch of things, they have started in the Senate, passed out of the Senate. Even when you talk about the gas tax, those kind of things, the Senate's acting like the House, and the House has been acting like the Senate. It's been strange this year. So it's just it doesn't mean what the outcome's going to be. It's just want to throw there. Let's talk about a few of the mechanics if this is passed by the time we're talking. You heard Director Sykes say about the licensing. So this $15, here's how the bill reads here. It says, let me go to that page before. It says, this section shall not apply to a person hunting white-tailed deer or feral swine with the aid of bait on privately owned or leased lands, provided the person has purchased, because they list the baiting law before that. And they said, so, that section will not apply to a person hunting white-tailed deer or feral swine with the aid of bait on privately owned or leased lands, provided that the person has purchased and is in possession of a bait privilege license issued by the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources as follows. Okay. A, the annual resident bait privilege license fee shall be $14 plus an issuance fee of $1. There's 15.
Yeah.
The annual non-resident bait privilege fee will be $50 plus an issuance of $1. So 51 for out-of-staters. The fees provided for by this section shall be subject to adjustment as provided in Section 9-1168. Number three here, a bait privilege license required by this section shall be procured in the same manner as an annual hunting license, with the issuance fee for the bait privilege license paid to and retained by the issuing officer agency. Part four, a person who is exempt from purchasing a hunting license shall not be exempt from the requirement to purchase bait privilege license pursuant to this section. We'll come back to that. And it says C here, commissioner may, without refund, suspend the use of baiting privilege license on a county, regional, or statewide basis to prevent the spread of diseases among wildlife by announcing the suspension in a news release. And part D here, the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources may adopt rules to implement the act, adding this amendatory language. Okay. The individual license, so your kids, the older folks, have to buy the baiting license if they're hunting. So if you're, say you're sitting in a stand together, okay, the way I understand it, and you have a rifle and your child has a rifle, you have to have two.
Right.
Both of you have to have a, even if that child doesn't have to have a hunting license, they still have to have the baiting license.
Right. In other words, if you're 15 and younger, you don't have to have a hunting license.
Right.
If you're 65 and older, you don't have to have a hunting license. If you have a lifetime license, then you're exempt from everything else. But if you're going to hunt over corn, you got to have this $15 license. Your 8-year-old kid's got to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Your 65-plus-year-old that doesn't have to have a license has got to have that license to hunt over corn.
So that's going to be, and it's going to be part of this. And the nuance of it, I'll have to find out down the road. For me, you know, my crew, you know, quite often they'll be my daughter and I, one rifle between us, maybe sometimes two, so we'll both have it. But then, like, if my 8-year-old, if he goes with us, then he won't have a rifle. He won't be a shooter. So I don't think he has to have the baiting license because he's not actively hunting.
Right.
So we'll see where this goes. I can tell you what is going to happen. If I could only figure out which corn company to buy stock in.
You are right about that.
I mean, the number of feeder sales in the state. I mean, already, listen, you can go into any given store throughout the year and they've got the corn piled up and the turkey scratch piled up and the, you know, all that stuff piled up. But now it'll be even more.
Every gas station you pass.
Yeah, but now it'll have a big increase. More people will do it. It's like I said, I get torn on a couple parts of it, and I get it. The pragmatic view is what you're talking about, that it's good for the state because we get more, air quotes here, license sales, which lets us get more of the Pittman-Robertson money back to do wildlife projects in the state. Big time. Yeah. Big time increase.
Lots
that's
of money.
That's a good thing. The idealist in me is bothered by an unequal footing by how much you can pay.
Yeah.
You know, and that somebody is – so we'll see where it goes. We'll talk about this.
I agree with you, Sean. You know, and with all the money, there's going to be a lot of money brought into the state, to the conservation department. This goes directly to the conservation department. And I'm kind of thinking as we're talking here, Mississippi might see that, man, Alabama's getting a lot of money off this license. Florida might say, man, Alabama's getting a lot of money off this license. There might be some other states that start charging that too.
Of course, you're going to hear, I'm going to tell you what you're going to hear. You'll hear people push back on the public land side and say, wait a second, private land gets debate and we don't get debate.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's going to be a lot of, and we got time for this discussion through the summer, and we'll do it. Before we wrap up here, a couple things. Yeah. Number one, how's your hunts been since we talked last?
Well, I haven't done any more good. I've killed two. My grandson killed one. So that's three total, which is a good season.
That's good.
Good season. But it seems like every time I go hunting, Sean, just about it's bad weather. You know, the wind blowing hard, or it's rained, or getting ready to rain, and it's just been a bad year for the times that I've been able to go. How about you?
I'll tell you what's interesting. So, I told you kind of my situation on the farm has been.
I know you killed one.
Yeah, I killed one. Yeah. So it'll be 2 weeks ago today. The issue I'll have is I have I do management, but I have not so great management going on around me, and we've just had a dwindling number of turkeys that I'll have between one and three goblin turkeys, you know, and I'll kill between one and two of them in a season. This year I've pretty much had two, and I don't know what happened to the other one. He might have gotten killed. I killed one, and so last weekend I drive in, and the four hens that were with the strutter I killed 2 weeks ago, they were out feeding, number one, not on nest, and with no gobbler.
Yeah.
And I saw another hen, so no gobblers with them. So, you know, now by today, one could have walked back in from somewhere else and
sure.
It could be taken up shop. But, so it's been pretty pretty bleak on that front. You know, you kill the one, and then when you see hens going, I mean, they had a week to find a gobbler, and they still didn't have a gobbler with them. That was, left me a little bit worried. We'll see, and hopefully I have better
generally
reports.
Generally speaking, when one gobbler gets killed and got hens around there, there's another gobbler.
It takes,
take
you know,
place.
May take a day or two.
Yeah,
but this has been a week.
Yeah,
and there was no gobbler showed up with those hens. So we'll see. Hopefully, I have better news by next week. I also want to quickly talk about speckled trout fishing. We've got like 2 minutes left here.
Yeah,
but it's obviously spring is here, and the fishing's been good. Now the rivers have come back up, muddied up some, but there's been a decent amount of green water at the south end of the bay, and the fishing's been really good. I have seen some really tremendous big sow trout been caught and released.
Right.
Pictures coming through in Instagram and all that this week. Some real, real nice fish. Captain Bobby talked with us. You know, it's springtime fishing. What we're doing right now is drifting, and he talked about it on Thursday's report as well. I mean, we're drift fishing in shallow water. When we say shallow, I mean between 5 and a foot. And more like 3 usually, although you can find them shallower and you find them deeper, and you're looking for slicks this time of year. You find that slick. Remember this, whether it's the wind or the current, the fish will be either up current or upwind from where they slick, right? And that's where the fish are. So don't cast to the slick, cast in front of where those fish are going, right? The slick's going to be behind them. It's like a vapor trail, in a way, behind the fish. So cast in front of the slick. You just got to figure out what your wind or your current's doing and where those fish are. And also the idea of having a small anchor or, listen, you can get one of those poles so cheap. I've got Cajun anchors. I've got the stick-it pins, all those kind of things on the boat. Let's you ease an anchor of some sort over, stop that boat, and catch fish. So if one person gets bit, you know, you get a cork goes down, even if you miss that fish, hurry up and get some sort of anchoring system down so you can sit there because the fish are right there and you can work them over. And then when they stop biting, the school's moved on, you can continue to drift and get back on those fish. So just a tip. But the fishing has been real good. I have not gotten a lot of reports out of South Baldwin County, but South Mobile County has been good. And hopefully next week we'll get Captain Charlie Gray on the show from Gray Gulf Charters to talk more about this and how the fishing's been down around Dauphin Island from his perspective. I can tell you it's good from everything else I'm hearing. All right. We're out of here. Prep Sports Report on next. We'll see you next week.